we supposed to get married?
I'm going
to
just swipe
left. I just want somebody to share my life with.
We're coming out of COVID into a better dating pool that is much more interested in commitment.
You can keep waiting for the fairy tale, or you can get on board with the new rules of relationships. If you've read my advice in the LA Times, then you know this ain't your mama's love advice. This is Dates and Mates with Damona Hoffman.
Welcome to the show. It's Damona, your certified dating coach and the host of Dates and Mates, which is now presented by TextNow, the app that gives you a free second phone number for dating, which I sure wish I had back when I was single. You know, all those guys that you're matching with that you give your number out to and then you don't actually want to see them again? It's no big deal with TextNow. You can just change your dating phone number, but keep your primary number for all your other business. I've said on this podcast before that dating in the last few months has been less predictable than ever before. And as a dating coach in the before COVID times, I could predict exactly the timeline for a relationship. Like, seriously, I could tell you when someone would be ready to move in or when the relationship just wasn't going to work out, when you would meet the parents, all of that. But obviously, right now, things are changing and evolving. And there's a lot of conjecture in the dating community about the future of dating and the future of sex as we move forward and hopefully out of this pandemic very soon. But to help us understand the state of the date today and peek into the future of sex, my friends at Cosmopolitan Magazine and Esquire Magazine have published a study in collaboration with the Kinsey Institute. And here on the show, I will have the editor-in-chief of Esquire, Michael Sebastian, and the editor-in-chief of Cosmo, Jessica Pels, with me to break down all of this data. And friends, as a fan of the mags, I am super excited for this show. But first, we have headlines. How to date post-pandemic without going broke. And the biggest mistakes older men make on dating apps. And by older men, I mean everybody. Plus, my guests, Jessica and Michael, will help me answer your questions in Dear Damona, like how to keep the conversation flowing on dating apps. And what's a good opening line when you're sliding into those DMs? All that and more on today's Dates and Mates. Now let's dish.
D's Dating Dish.
The folks at Bankrate.com shared some news with me on how dating gets expensive, but what you can do about it. Did you know that before the pandemic, every person in the U.S. spent about $168 on dating every month? And if you ask me, that is actually an underestimation when you really consider all of the costs of dating, from getting your blowouts, getting your nails did, guys, getting what are you spending money on, guys? Oh, you're spending money on the dates a lot of the times. I get it, yes. And I know, having just had my anniversary dinner and seeing the bill that I passed right on over to my husband, I know that dating is not cheap. And I guess if there's a silver lining on dating in the pandemic, it's that, well, you've saved a lot of money, haven't you, from virtual dates that otherwise would have been coffee, drinks, dinner. Hopefully you're not doing dinner on first dates. But now those have moved to virtual dates. So you've actually saved quite a lot, maybe even more than $168 a month. And yet now, as we are moving into the next phase of dating, you got to be thinking about, how can I date again without breaking the bank? May I remind you, friends, that there are many free or cheap dates that you can do that are actually pretty cute and romantic. You can go for a walk. I live in LA. You can go for a walk along the beach here. Summer and spring are coming. Maybe you have a nice lake or river near where you live. If you don't live by the ocean, that's always romantic. Of course, make sure it's a public place where everybody, where people are going to see you. But you know, that could be romantic. A picnic could be also romantic and also inexpensive. You could go for a bike ride, a hike. Now, as you're able to do more things outdoors, take advantage of that. You can cook together. You can make your own wine tasting. Go pick a couple of different bottles and do your own wine tasting or beer tasting. There's so many ways that you can save money. You don't have to go to an expensive restaurant. We're not going to be going out to the expensive theater or even maybe movies probably for a little bit. So try to get creative on ways that you can save money. Another thing that Bankrate suggested is split the bill. I don't know why. I'm sort of old-fashioned about first dates. But I think beyond that, I'm probably going to change my mind on that eventually. You could probably talk me into it. But I know a lot more people are going Dutch on dates. And especially once you're in a relationship, you want it to be a partnership. You want to contribute. So offer to split the date so that one person isn't carrying the brunt of it and, you know, running up their credit card right after the pandemic. We just got those checks. We just got that stimulus. You can't be spending it all on dates right away. And then another great tip from Bankrate was budget for dates. Look, I think this is a genius idea. I never thought of it before, but I actually was going through some old papers a while ago and I found a budget that I did for our honeymoon. Like I actually budgeted, we're going to spend, you know, $100 on meals and then the hotel in this place. And I was a TV exec at the time. I was doing all right. I didn't have a problem with money, but I didn't want to overspend my money or spend it unnecessarily because I had just bought a house and I was trying to save up for a lot of things like having a kid and other things that are very expensive. So think about how much do you actually spend on dates? And maybe if you have spent a lot on going out dates or having drinks with people, which can really add up very quickly, then maybe it's a good time for you to plan some other dates so that you can hit your budget numbers and we can collectively get into the black and out of the red. Older men, you've been making some mistakes on dating apps, according to InsideHook.com. The interesting thing is, as I read this article, I was like, yeah, these are issues that older men might have. They say lying about your age, the selfies, misuse of emojis. But you know what? These are actually problems that I've heard from everybody, regardless of gender, regardless of age. So let me take you through a few of these because I think everybody can learn from these. Lying about your age. People ask me this all the time. And I'm never going to tell you what you should do, but I'm going to ask the questions that make you realize what you need to do to be in alignment with your values. Do you want to lie about your age and then hit it off with someone and ultimately have to disclose to them down the road that you built your relationship on a lie? If the answer to that is no, then you should be authentic about your age on the dating app. And yes, it's very true that there are certain brackets that people search within, either related to their age or related to like 35 to 40, 40 to 45, 45 to 50, that you may need to overcome in being broader in your searches. But I've said this on the show before. If you are attracted to someone, regardless of age, studies have shown that you will respond to them, even if it's not an age match or you're outside of the age range that person is searching within. So you need to be a little bit more proactive to make sure that you're showing up to the people that you want to meet. Another mistake, selfies. On Inside Hook, they say selfies should not be on dating apps. I do not agree with this statement. I think selfies actually are the norm on dating apps now. Yet in this article, it says older men specifically are notoriously bad at taking them because they ain't trying to live their Instagram selfie life, you know. But I think there is an art to taking a great selfie. And I highly recommend, especially coming out of a time of quarantine where many people don't have someone else that can take a photo of them, you better get your selfie game right. You better get yourself a tripod and a remote that you can take photos with and figure out your angles. This is a key skill in dating today. And you can say, that sounds like a lot of work, Damona. I don't want to do that. And that's fine. But I don't want to hear from you 3 months from now. Why is everybody out here dating? I didn't do that because I didn't want to learn how to take a good selfie. And now everybody else is getting dates and I'm not. So listen up to that. Also listen up. Using weird pet names, according to Inside Hook, not cute on dating apps. I would agree with this. Like, the hey gorgeous, hey beautiful, hey baby. They reference this in the article as it may seem like it's flattery to you, but it actually comes off as a little bit creepy. If you don't know somebody, don't call them a pet name just out of the gate. You got to work up to being baby, honey, sweetie, okay? Not having enough photos. How many photos do you need in a dating profile? Pop quiz, 4 to 5. That's it. More than that, and it's your Instagram feed. Less than that, and you're a catfish, and I don't even know who you are. So, another thing, dissing astrology. It's funny. We were going to cover this on the show a few weeks ago, but I don't want you guys to think I'm too weird because I've been into astrology and tarot and all this stuff since I was like 10 years old. But astrology now is very hot on the dating apps, and I will leave it at that. You can check out InsideHook.com, which we will link to in the show notes, along with our other story from Bankrate.com if you want to learn more about how to have a great profile, if you want to learn more about the mistakes that older men are making on dating apps, and if you want a little TLC for your dating app. I'm actually going to be doing a live workshop with Los Angeles Community College. Anybody can take it anywhere in the world. It's taking place on April 22nd at 6 p.m. Pacific, and we will go through all of the must-dos and the no-nos, and we will workshop your dating profile so that you can get ready for your spring fling love season and have the profile that's going to attract the right kind of dates to you. When we come back, we will have Jessica Pels, editor-in-chief of Cosmopolitan Magazine, and Michael Sebastian, editor-in-chief of Esquire, talking about the future of sex. Stay tuned. I am here with two very special guests, Jessica Pels, editor-in-chief of Cosmopolitan Magazine, and Michael Sebastian, editor-in-chief of Esquire. They are here to talk about the latest study that Cosmo and Esquire have co-sponsored, along with the Kinsey Institute, one of the top names in the science of dating and relationships. And there are so many juicy details in this study that I can't wait to share with you. So please give big smooches to Jessica Pels and Michael Sebastian.
It's my pleasure. It's our pleasure. Yeah, yeah. Thank you for having us.
Well, since we're talking about pleasure, we're talking about the future of sex. And this is just so timely and so relevant. I know you did this study in conjunction with the Kinsey Institute, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's right.
So tell me about how this study came to be and how you developed this survey.
Sure. Jess, do you want to take that or what do you think?
You have a lovely way of talking about it, so I think you should go for it.
Oh, all right. Okay. So, you know, sex and dating and relationships in the last year have been fraught, I guess would probably be a very simple way of putting it. And, you know, I think the thing is that my guy friends and I, who are all kind of the same, you know, we have wives, families, that kind of thing. And I know that there is some weird stuff going on. And yet we don't talk about it, right? Guys don't talk about that stuff. We talk about everything but that. And, you know, and sometimes I feel like even though we're talking about a music recommendation or, you know, sports or something like that, that maybe we're actually talking about our relationships or something like that. And so what I was really wanted to do was I wanted to find out what's really going on so that for a lot of these guys that we appeal to at Esquire or really just friends of mine or really just for my own edification, we would know. And so we started talking to our pals at Cosmo and, you know, they are the experts in this. So we thought like, why wouldn't we pair up with them? And then they got us together with the Kinsey Institute. And then we started asking all these questions. And that was really the impetus behind it all, at least for Esquire.
We wanted to bring together, you know, iconic brands in this space. And, you know, Cosmo is so known for speaking to the woman's experience of sex and dating and relationships. Esquire, same for men. And then, of course, the famed Kinsey Institute. It just seemed like the three of us could put our heads together, gather some original data and really put together a sort of definitive look at what's coming down the pike. And, you know, the other thing is that I, as Michael was thinking about, you know, his situation and what married couples maybe aren't talking about right now, my team and I were talking about COVID in terms of like, oh, it's going to be a bloodbath of breakups because, you know, every couple that's not madly in love is just going to get to a breaking point with this. And we also thought that at the end of COVID, it would just be a totally wild free-for-all of singles just out there having one night stands every single night. We had these hunches and we wanted to see whether they were accurate. And turns out they were not, which we're actually thrilled by because surprising data is our favorite thing. So that's how we got here.
All right, let's dig into the data then, Jess, because I'll admit, listeners of the show know, I kind of predicted the same thing, like just based on what was happening also in Wuhan. Like I say they're like the ghost of Christmas future. Like their divorces were way up after the first lockdown. And I was like, that's going to happen here. And it didn't happen here. And it hasn't yet. I'm not sure if it's coming. And I want to know what you see in the survey. And also, like, they're partying there like it's 1999 or sometime in the 2000s. And they're definitely, I would say from what I'm seeing, hookup culture is a little bit more back. But yeah, you're looking at an American audience, which is, you know, most of our listeners are in the U.S. What are you seeing both on both of those fronts?
Yeah, so interestingly about couples who have been together during quarantine, what our data found very definitively is that those people are happier than they were before. They feel closer to their partner. They're more satisfied sexually with their partner than they were before. So generally, couples got, you know, happier than they have been. And that was like really sweet to see. And Esquire pointed out this data point in the survey, which is that 69% of men say that they feel more affectionate towards their partners now than they did before the beginning of COVID, which is just sweet, warm and fuzzy thing to hear. And actually, you know, there were respondents on our survey who admitted to fantasizing about leaving their partners, but only 2% of them plan to actually make a change. So I actually don't think we're going to see a ton of divorces or breakups in the wake of all this.
I'm really curious to hear from the Esquire perspective, from the man's lens. Why do you think it is that men are feeling more affectionate now?
Great question. That was something that I was surprised but heartened to see, that stat that Jess pointed out, and the fact that, you know, these relationships seem to be getting deeper, I suppose. And, you know, there's so much kind of anecdotal evidence that we came upon. I mean, you know, I think it's something that at some point in this whole thing, right, when you're with your partner, is that you kind of need to decide, am I committing to this? Are we doing this, or are we going to kind of go our separate ways, you know, whether we're actually going to leave each other or whether we're just going to kind of, you know, exist in different spheres or something like that. And I think that what we saw is that there was the vast majority of people said, we're in this, we're going to do this. And I think that once people kind of got over maybe that initial hump of, you know, I think as we put it, like getting over the little quirks that you hear your partner say on Zoom calls and so on, is that we kind of got to that deeper level of affection. And of course, you know, there's this idea that like you're cooped up with somebody, right? So when it comes to kind of your sex life, is that, you know, you might as well, I guess, begin to explore, right? You know, explore each other, I guess, for lack of a better term. And I think that another thing too that's important is that this pandemic for couples has taken, especially couples with kids, has taken a real partnership to get through.
Yes.
And a lot of that, you know, I know that certainly a lot of that has fallen on, you know, wives or women in relationships too, especially ones that have kids. And what I think has been good to see, again, and this is kind of speaking beyond the survey, is just the fact that a lot of men have really sort of dug in and begin supporting their partners and their families in ways that they hadn't before. And I think that is something that, I mean, if that can continue beyond this pandemic, that's going to make those relationships all the more richer. I mean, I know you know, just speaking personally, there was something that before this pandemic, my wife and I both worked and we have two kids and our lives were going in a million different directions. And when we had arguments, the argument, you know, it might be about something stupid or silly, but it was always actually about division of labor. It was always about, you know, my wife, you know, my wife's name is Sally. Sally saying something like, you know, she uses so much of her brain space thinking about who's picking up this kid and what are we going to buy this kid for their birthday and so on. And meanwhile, I'm sitting there going, why can't you recognize all the things I do? I'm way more responsible than my dad was. And yet now, because we've been together and we've had to do all this juggling and everything else, it's like I see her plight so much better as a result of this. And I hope that we're both better partners as a result.
I love that.
I would just add that, you know, when it comes to why men might feel more affectionate towards their partners, to sort of spin off your point, Michael, it also seems like everyone, not just men, but everyone got really in touch against our wills, got very in touch with fear and with, you know, despair and grief. And we all had to spiral down into that place. And I think a lot of us realized that a partner is a helpful way to feel safe or to feel a little bit better. And so in a way, I think that my perception of this is that men being more open about being emotionally needy, I hope that that is a trend that emerges from all of this as well.
It's a flip to look at that as a benefit instead of as a deficit. And, you know, there was actually a study that we covered on the show a couple years ago that men who do the dishes and share in housework get laid more. So this is just proof of that
Sounds
point,
about right?
Division of labor. But interestingly, there was something, it's not all rosy, right? There was something in this that caught my eye that in the Esquire article, one in seven straight men did something they considered to be infidelity during the pandemic, and they did it IRL, which seems like super risky to me. I actually had a friend who got their whole family got COVID, and I was talking to another friend about it, and I was like, they have no idea how they got it. And she was like, I think people been doing things and they're not talking about what they're doing. Is that what's happening? I mean, one in seven is not a huge number, but it's enough to count.
This is not going to answer your question at all, but there is a group, a very small, specific group of people that I thought about during this study, which is the people who have secret second families. What have they been doing during this?
Like, I was thinking, you know, about that,
like,
too.
The whole, like, I'm just going to pop out for something or whatever got a whole hell of a lot more difficult for them. Like, that's a story that I want to tell right there is, like, what about the person who has a second family? Yeah, the one in seven to me, I mean, that number could have been anything. And it would have been shocking to me because of the difficulty of doing that in real life, right?
Right.
And so I'm not sure that it's a volume number to me. It's just like a, holy shit, this is actually happening.
Yeah. It's surprising to me. It seems like a risk. It seems like a double risk. But I did think about the people with two families, like, well, I guess that's not going to be happening anymore.
Exactly.
To your point about risk, though, I mean, that's a COVID is adding a whole one of the things that our survey revealed is that COVID is adding a third layer of safety concern to sex. You know, the first is STIs. The second is unwanted pregnancy. And now the third is COVID. And our survey respondents were very upfront about the fact that a lot of them plan to ask outright before engaging in sexual activity if their new partner is vaccinated or what their COVID status is. A lot of them plan to cancel dates more readily if they're not feeling well or if the other person isn't feeling well. So there's definitely a broad sort of COVID concern about sex in particular that really is not surprising to come out of all this.
Yeah, well, let's talk about dating. For many of our listeners are single and are pretty much done with dating during COVID. And, a lot of the questions I would get before COVID were around this dating fatigue and ghosting and hookup culture. What did the survey show you, Jess, in terms of the changes to that that we can expect to see as things begin to open up?
Well, luckily for your listeners, it's a lot of good news, thank God. We talked to, in addition to conducting the survey across the country, we also talked to a lot of experts to get a sense of what they were seeing and hearing on the ground, one of whom works at Hinge. And one of my favorite stats from this whole project is that half of Hinge users said that they used this time to break bad habits and to become better at dating. That means, you know, to stop ghosting, to rush the connection, to, you know, play games, which is really nice. So hopefully we're coming out of COVID and into a better dating pool. And we're definitely coming into a dating pool that is much more interested in commitment. That was the you know, really salient takeaway from all of this for me, was that this is going to be the commitment generation. And part of it is what we talked about earlier, which is, you know, emotional needs are much more at the surface for, you know, for people who have lived through this pandemic than for any of us beforehand. And so people care more about commitment. They're really seeking a committed relationship. They're going to wait longer to meet someone in person. 70% of our survey respondents said they're going to continue to do video dating before real life dating, even after COVID, which was fascinating to me because, you know, Zoom and FaceTime, it can all be kind of exhausting. But people really want to make sure that when they do risk their health, when they do step outside the house, that it's worth it. It's for someone they feel like they have a connection with, and that it's someone that they can see themselves maybe, you know, going further with. And so really, in a way, this all felt like the death knell for the one night stand. And our survey respondents, most of them outright said they're no longer interested in that whole one night stand life.
That was very surprising to me in the study. And I wonder how much of that is like, in theory right now, I'm not interested in the one night stand. Because I also saw, Michael, you might be able to comment on this. I also saw that 64% said they're less interested in having more than one sexual partner at a time. But I really wonder how much of that is just like, we're still in it, right? And the survey was conducted at a time when we were really still locked down. And I don't know if like 6 months in the future, if we're going to feel the same way, you know, when we got our summer groove on, we're trying to look for our fling. I don't know. What do you think from your side of the table?
So just to kind of echo what both of you said is that I was surprised by those findings as well. And I do think that there's probably a little bit of what you talked about, which is that once we're in, you know, the heat of the moment, that some of those calculations might change, I suppose. But I do think that, you know, there was something in the write-up that we did. There was this turn of phrase that I really liked, that was basically, when we're in a serious situation like this, we kind of begin to really seriously look at our lives and make serious adjustments. And so it seems to me that this is extraordinary. This situation, this moment that we're in, is extraordinary, and it makes profound changes on people. And so I do think that even when people are out there again, yeah, of course there's going to be people mm-hmm. who have too much to drink and are caught up in the moment and you know, and have one night stands and so on. And that's great. And they should do that. Right. But I do think that for most of these people that those changes are just, you know, the thing that we need to accept is that we are different people from a year ago because of what we've experienced. And that is certainly going to be reflected in our dating lives and our love lives and so on.
I appreciate your optimism on that.
Thanks.
A lot of the experts we talked to referred to this period of time as a reset. You know, whether or not that was the intention, certainly not our collective intention going in, that's the result that we got, is that it was a reset. You know, it showed us that we can go a year without getting laid and it's not the end of the world. It showed us what really matters to us. And it really does, from what we're hearing, and, you know, of course, that again, Michael, as you said, in the heat of the moment, that could all change. But from what we're hearing from people, it really sounds like one of the things that they got out of the pandemic is the realization that a one-night stand type hookup existence was really more about getting some than it was about getting something good. One of our experts talked about how hookup culture has never really been built around doing the experience well. It's just been about doing the experience. And that was, I think, a really interesting thing to put together and think about in the process of all of this, is that like, hookup culture has really been more about checking off a box than it has been about having like really fantastic sex. And that is a shift that I really think we are seeing as a result of everything that has changed.
Absolutely. And if you are wanting to have very fantastic sex, go back to the Dates and Mates episode where we interviewed Taylor Andrews from Cosmopolitan, who wrote a book on this very topic. But I digress. You also looked at, I think this time also makes some of us nostalgic for the past, not just like pre-COVID and like, remember when we could go to restaurants and not be worried we were going to catch a deadly disease? Remember that? But also just like romanticizing the past partners. And you also looked at contact that people had with their exes. What did you see in the survey? And were there certain people that were more likely to be nostalgic about past loves?
One of the stats that jumped out at us was that lesbian women and bisexual men were the most likely to text an ex during the pandemic. 32% of them had said that.
Do you think there is something in the pandemic mindset that is making people more likely to go back to past loves? Or I'm curious if that, I mean, I know you didn't do the study from before, but I'm curious if that might just be like what the number is normally.
Anyway, right.
I'm curious if you've ever like looked into that before, or if there was any change in behavior because of the pandemic that you saw.
I will say one thing that we joke about a lot here at Cosmo is about Mercury retrograde. I work for an audience that is very into astrology. And one of the things that if you know anything about astrology, you know, is that Mercury retrograde is the time of your ex coming out of the woodwork, you know, sending you a UP text, and just be prepared for that. So that's been very, very much a big part of young woman culture for a while. I think there were two retrogrades during COVID, maybe three or four. And, you know, I think it always up to its antics.
It feels like one big retrograde, honestly.
Doesn't it?
Still
kind of connection that you're trying to make is really interesting, though, about this nostalgia, because everybody's felt that, right? Everybody has been thinking about, you know, again, not just immediately pre-pandemic, but like thinking about when they were in their 20s or teens or childhood or something like that. It's just there's something weird about pandemic time that does that, right? And this is not about contacting an ex, but we have, so the issue, the Esquire issue that this is in, it's part of a broader package that we're calling Sex and Other Desires. And it's the first time that Esquire has done one of these packages in a while. And I addressed this in my editor's letter because, you know, it's something that we needed to think long and hard about how we wanted to address this topic. And so one of the stories in there is done by one of our editors, in which her and her husband, they're both in their 30s, they don't have kids, but during the pandemic, they decided to read Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, which turns 30 next year, and try to kind of like live based on that. And it's a very funny piece because, you know, they're both very progressive people, and yet they found themselves actually kind of enjoying, like kind of digging some of the advice that was in there, despite like not wanting to at all. And so I think that, you know, just this whole kind of general feeling of nostalgia is it's so thick, you can kind of reach out and touch it, you know?
Yeah, it's funny, like, you just made me feel really old. That came out 30 years ago. But it's interesting how like we all think that we're recreating the reinventing the wheel, right? It's like, no, relationships are so different right now. But like when you go back to earlier works like that, you realize that there are some universalities and a lot, like I started writing dating profiles 15 years ago. And while the technology has changed and, you know, the apps have changed, a lot of the core information is still the same. And I think it's really all about connection, and people just really want to connect. And the pandemic has given us a vehicle to be able to do that more effectively. And I'm really hopeful. I'm very hopeful. Give me good news, Jess. I'm very hopeful that some of this will stick around and that the next phase of dating, and specifically of online dating and dating apps, will be more satisfying for people than it was even before the pandemic began.
That's exactly what it feels like the results of all of this say. And it's very loud. And I think, you know, we may feel like attitudes might change once the world is open again. But what gives me hope is that it's Americans who are saying this is what they want. It's not just them saying this is what they are going to, you know, try to do. It's them saying, no, I want commitment. I want, you know, better quality dating relationships, sexual relationships. You know, another takeaway from the survey for us was that there will be more sexual experimentation, but within the safety of a relationship is how it seems like that's going to play out. For couples who have been quarantined together, they say that they have been experimenting more than they did before, which makes a lot of sense if you're, you know, trapped in one place and you need to keep things fresh. Like, what better time than a pandemic to figure out how to do that. And for singles, you know, there's definitely a desire to get out there and like make up for lost time. But it seems very much like that will happen in contexts that feel more emotionally enriching. And honestly, you know, one of the things that I've been thinking about is there's so much about dating that feels really shitty, right? Like, there's so much of the whole talking to a ton of people on the app, and then, you know, you meet a couple and this one's a total dud and this one was an asshole, and like, you know, if you sleep with someone and then he's a jerk to you the next morning, like, there's a lot about the dating process that feels shitty and that makes you feel like shit. And I think that's especially true for women. And I think what we're seeing is people's rejection of that. Like, part of it maybe is what we've talked about, this you know, fragility sort of surfacing for all of us, that we're more conscientious about the fact that we have emotional needs. And maybe that means that we're maxed out. Like, I'm maxed out on feeling shitty. I will tell you that right now. And I don't need, you know, the dating scene to make me feel worse. So I'm going to look out for me. And what that means is, you know, instead of one night stands, maybe it's a three night stand with someone who I feel something with and I care even just a little bit about.
That is a great way to look at it. And so much of it, I think, is our perception of it too. Like, if you go in like, oh, I have to go through this again and I'm carrying this weight of it being shitty, then you probably will have a shitty experience of it. But if you go in with the intention of elevating your experience, then maybe we can elevate the experience for everyone else. All right. We have questions from listeners. So I have loved this conversation. We'll put the link to both the Cosmo and the Esquire analysis of this in the show notes. But I want to know what you have to say to our listener questions. So let's tackle them right after this. Jess and Michael will take all of their knowledge as editors-in-chief of the hottest magazines on sex and relationships around to help me answer your questions.
Dear Damona.
Damona, help me.
Our first question comes to us from a listener named Jane. She says, my question is about keeping the conversation flowing on dating apps during the pandemic. I'm a straight female who doesn't mind initiating conversations on dating apps. That I can tell she's a listener of the show.
Good for her.
I'd say, yeah, exactly. I'd say there is interest because they respond to my messages, but there's no, how about you? I hear this a lot, y'all. She says, it feels like, one, I'm doing all the work, and two, the guy isn't curious enough to ask more about me, so I let the conversation fizzle. Am I wrong to move on if someone isn't asking me questions? Michael, I'm going to go to you first because I know that, like, I hear this so much from the ladies. And Jess, I know you're going to have something to say about this too.
I thought.
I'm like, Michael, give me the men's perspective, because I feel a lot of women are like, I don't want to do so much work in dating today. Why are guys so lazy?
Yeah, I know. We really are, aren't we?
By the way, I do not think that, but that's the perception I've heard.
So I have a two-part answer to that question. The first is that I don't think that a guy not sort of asking questions in the way that she sort of wants necessarily means that he's a selfish person or that he's that he's not right for her and so on. I mean, I think that the communication platforms that we use can be tricky, right? So until you actually get in front of the person, who knows? That's part one. The second part is, though, and this is going to contradict everything that I just said about that, but I do feel like if you can't offer up a simple, hey, how are you, then that to me feels like a huge red flag. Maybe I'm just going to go with the second part of my answer for that. Can we edit out that first part and just say,
we love to edit.
It's all
damn it.
No, I think it's all relevant. I think it's yes and. But Jess, I want to know, I saw you nodding your head furiously to the second part.
Yes. I mean, we've all been on dates with the men who talk about themselves for 3 hours. And one of my tennis pals just had one of these dates and spent the entire dinner talking about himself. She would leave pauses so that he could ask her questions. He didn't take the bait. And, you know, I think when it comes to chatting on a dating app, when this listener asks the question, you know, like, why does this keep happening? She seems to think that the problem is her. That is not true. The problem is them. And if anyone you're talking to will let the conversation fizzle out, that means there's not enough interest there. And that if you were to meet, you'd have to do more of the work. And I see that as Michael put it, as a red flag and like a thank you for proving to me that you're not worth my time and moving on. Because the truth is, if there's interest, there will be conversation. And even if, Michael, as you say, they're not the kind of conversationalist to ask necessarily thoughtful questions, you still keep the conversation alive if you want to keep that person in your world. And so I say good riddance.
Yeah, I feel like I'm really kind of coming firmly around to that, which is the, you know, excellent. Asking how are you, just that is so easy too. Like, come on, dude. Like, let's do the bare minimum here at least. Come on.
Yes.
Well, here, I would say I look at all of these elements of dating as learned skills. And I think overall, we've grown pretty bad at communicating. And particularly, like, when I started coaching, I would say texting or messaging is for information, not conversation. You got to get someone to the next phase, the phone call, the FaceTime, the date. But I've had to, over the last, say, 10 years, incorporate texting training into my courses because I realized that people like just didn't even really know texticate, you know, what to actually say to move the conversation along. So that actually dives into our second question. This next question comes to us in a voice memo from one of the listeners who's in my Patreon Friends with Benefits group.
Hi guys, I'm Chris, and my question is, what are some good opening lines to use on dating apps?
You know, there's a lot of competition on the apps, and he wants to make a good impression on the women that he's matching with. Who has a good line for him, a good way for him to start the conversation? Jess.
I will raise my hand here. I feel like this is actually a good connection back to the last question, which is I really think the best thing you can say is not a comment, but a question, and a question about something you saw on their profile. So, you know, obviously every dating app surfaces different information, but find something there that interests you and ask a question about it. It's respectful. It's a way to get some interesting information that actually means something to and about that person. And that is how I would recommend starting.
That's great.
So Jess, it's interesting you say that. I hope this doesn't sound too promotional for Esquire magazine, but in this same issue, we have a profile of the most active guy on Tinder. So this is the guy, this is a guy who basically has the most matches and is out there the most based on the data that Tinder has. And there's actually advice from him in there as well. And one of the first points that he makes is to begin asking questions based on stuff that you see in the profile of somebody's profile. So I think that, you know, the reporting backs that up, Jess, let's put it that way.
I love it.
Excellent. Fact checked. Love it.
Fact checked. And I will co-sign on that because my listeners know that my formula is a comment plus a question. That's the simple formula. So that's initially what I have told Christopher. Or to just dive in with a question, I like to do like a little this or that game because everybody has an opinion on like, I don't know, chocolate chip or rocky road or morning person or night person. And then you're jump started into the conversation. But yeah, you got to follow up with the questions. Like, don't just ask one.
Yes.
Similar to more questions. Said in the last one. Okay. One last question. Yes. This came to us in an email from a listener we will call L. Elle says, I hate that dating apps don't give me a great sense of who people are, and I'm really tired of meeting people through the apps. As things are opening up, pandemic, parenthetical, I'd love to know how I can meet people right now offline.
Great.
Are things opening up? Are things really opening up? Is this possible?
Yeah. So is she asking like right now on April 5th or kind of post-pandemic, whenever that is, whatever that means.
Right now, I mean, look, I'm in California. Things are still super locked down. You all are in the New York, New Jersey area. Other places where our listeners are, like, there are no masks and things are partying. So I would just assume that we are in a post-pandemic world in some places. Where can you meet
someone
offline?
That makes sense. The mask really does make it hard to meet people in person because you just have no idea, you know, who you're talking to. But I have a piece of advice here, which is maybe going to sound a little bit woo-woo. But when you're going about your daily life and you are going to a place, a physical place that is related to your interests, if you're an avid reader and you're going to a bookstore, if you are a dancer and you're going to the dance studio, if you're a golfer and you're going to the course, you should sort of actively wake yourself up in those environments specifically to the people who are around you, because that's a great place to find someone who already shares an interest with you, and then you're off and running from there. And it's also a way to weed out, you know, the bar scene can turn up a certain kind of interaction, and the party scene can do the same. And I find that this is just a really nice way to meet someone who's on your level and who you can already sort of make a great first date plan with.
That's genius. You got to connect with people where you already are and what you already love doing. Any additional thoughts, Michael?
One good note that, you know, whether it's right now or kind of post-pandemic, that is something that I'm feeling, I've observed, and so on. The other weekend, I went into, so for listeners who live places that are already open up, this is going to sound probably really pathetic to them, but I walked inside a bar in New York City for the first time in a year. And the reason I walked inside was to use the bathroom. There was nothing like, unfortunately, I wasn't going to like saddle up to the bar or anything like that. And there were people that were sitting at tables and everything like that. And I fucking loved this so much. I could have laid down on the floor of the bar and just been like, I'm not moving.
You shouldn't lay down on the floor of any bar.
No, trust me. Dirty. I was fine with that. I would have absolutely would have soaked it all up and just whatever happened. But I think the thing though that whether it's that situation which I observed or in others is that the people who are out, and whether they're doing it responsibly because they've been vaccinated or what, or whether they're just throwing caution in the wind, are so eager for connection that right now I feel like it's probably the most fertile time to meet people, because it's like, whatever, I'll talk to anybody. You know, I've been talking to the same three people for the last year. So like, give me some conversation. I'll talk to anybody. So again, whether it's at, you know, a bar might turn up the wrong kind of person, you're right, Jess. So maybe it is a bookstore or a golf course or whatever, but like, people are ready to talk and they're ready to hang out and they're ready to, you know, to get to know other people.
That's great. Mm-hmm. And honestly, even if it doesn't end up in lifelong romance, I think it's good to just get back out there and start practicing talking to people, because we've spent the last year, yes, you know, with our heads down and our mask on, like, don't look at me, don't breathe air in my direction. And it, like I said earlier, it's, these are a set of learned skills, and the more we practice them, the better we will become at them. So thank you so much for sharing your insights and this amazing survey. I highly encourage everyone to subscribe to the magazines. You can get, like, I get my Cosmo on my door every month, and I get to read it cover to cover. Esquire.
We love that.
Amazing, amazing men's magazine. But I mean, ladies, you can learn something from reading Esquire too. So y'all check it out, and we'll put the links in the show notes. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you. This was a blast.
Us. Yeah, this was so much fun.
We will put the links to both the Esquire and Cosmo articles, and you should read them both. There's different data that they chose to highlight, and both articles are fascinating. While you're at it, why not subscribe to the magazines? I get Cosmo delivered to my door, and Esquire is also a fabulous magazine for men. But hey, ladies, you can read the men's magazine and you can know what the guys are thinking. And guys, you should get Cosmo, and let's switch it up a little bit and learn more and experience more and get these magazines. So if you really want a deeper understanding of human behavior, why not subscribe to both? I hope you enjoyed episode 356 of Dates and Mates. You can check out the episode recap at datesandmates.com. Do you have a question about your love life, but maybe you're a little nervous to ask it on the show? Don't worry, I got you. All you need to do is join my Patreon Friends with Benefits Club. There, I do a weekly live stream with all of my other friends with benefits. You can ask your question there, get live feedback right there in that private supportive group. Plus, you'll get exclusive content that you can't find anywhere else with all of the material that I've done to help you in dating and relationships. You can join the club at patreon.com/datesandmates for just $5 a month. I will be back again next week with Caroline Stanbury. You may know her from Bravo TV's Ladies of London. She's also the host of the Divorced Not Dead podcast, and she'll be talking about how she fell in love with a much younger man and moved on after her very public divorce. And even if you haven't had that experience, it's definitely an episode that you're going to want to listen into. Until next week, I wish you happy dating.